Drunk on Comics, episode 116. Tony here, along with Matt in the studio, to give you another week full of comic book bliss. We discuss the mystery surrounding Nova in Guardians of the Galaxy, the amazing storytelling of Remender in Uncanny Avengers, and what are the Dream Police. We also found some teasers of the Access event, a new G.I. Joe book coming out, and would they actually make another Blade movie? And we also got into some grooting. So grab a drink and enjoy episode 116 of Drunk on Comics. Words of Linkin Park, in the end, it doesn't even matter.
That sounds like the book I was reading this week. This is Drunk on Comics. Welcome, listeners all, returning listeners, new listeners. We have just the Super McKay brothers here today.
Yes, Derek and Kevin are on their way. No, they're already there now. They're in the great up north in Canada.
Eh?
Yep.
Even though really they're just geographically east of us.
But. Yes, but they're there hard working, hardly working. I don't know what you'd say. They're up there having fun at a convention, getting some interviews, which we'll probably post at some point in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, so that leaves us to hold down the fort. So we're going to get things started here with Off the Shelf. Surprise, surprise. What did you read this week, Tony?
Well, first, Off the Shelf is brought to you by Grand Con, happening in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Holiday Inn Crown Plaza on 28th Street, September 19th through 21st. Make sure to check out their website to get more information on this convention that is both gaming and comic books.
Grand-com. Let me say it again. Grand-com.
Con. Can you fucking speak?
No, I can't. grand-con.com.
All right. Okay, you can at least spell. This week, I got a book that we have been looking forward to for months since it was kind of announced, and it is Guardians of the Galaxy number 18.
It's the Original Sin tie-in.
Yes, and with this whole Original Sin thing, some of the reveals that have happened in some of the books are not all that important or all that really mysterious. It's like, yeah, okay, that was interesting.
Yeah, and some of them are definitely ways to just try to pander a character like Angela into, oh, she's been part of the Marvel Universe forever.
She's just been hidden.
Yeah.
This one, however, takes one of the biggest mysteries for Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, obviously, those that haven't read Guardians of the Galaxy before probably have no clue who most of the people that are within this storyline are. And this obviously takes, I don't know, a sidetrack from what's been going on in this new reiteration of the comic of Guardians of the Galaxy. But as me and Matt have both said before, what happened when Thanos, Peter Quill, and Nova were stuck in the Cancerverse? And this was a big cosmic event that happened at the end of War of Kings. About 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah.
It's been a little while.
I mean, essentially, at the end, it probably wasn't that long ago. I mean, our memory seems to think everything is...
Yeah, longer away than it
but,
was.
In the Cancerverse, essentially a universe that had no death was trying to take over our universe. And Captain Marvel, of all people, was the main bad guy, because in that universe, he didn't die of cancer.
Because there wasn't death there.
There was no death there. And so Thanos had been resurrected. Thanos had been dead and was resurrected by death herself to serve a purpose, to bring death to that universe. And so as it kills all the bad guys in the cancer universe, the fault line that had been ripped open that emerged the two universes, allowed them to come through, was closing in. And that's when Peter Quill and Star-Lord...
Black Bolt was there too, though, actually.
No, Black Bolt is the one that opened the rift at the end of War of the Kings. But
I think he escaped, though, coming out. Because remember, he was trapped, too, and him being back was like, how are you back?
Yeah, so he got out. But essentially, Star-Lord and Nova were going to sacrifice themselves to make sure that Thanos stayed in the Cancerverse. Because they thought, you know, if we sacrifice ourselves, at least Thanos won't be back alive in our universe.
So. All right, enough premises-ness.
Okay. All right.
Although, I mean, all this is very important for why this story is so important. Like, that was a big thing. How did Peter Quill get back?
Yeah.
Where is, you know, Nova? And you got this issue with Gamora pretty much saying, or having Peter tied up saying, I need answers. I want answers. I'm getting sick of this. And they've lightly mentioned, you know, it a couple times throughout this series. You had one issue in particular where Peter goes and talks to Thanos. And I forget what he was talking
about. It was about the time displacement
thing. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Kind of knowing that something's happening within the universe and everything. And so you kind of get this sense of, like, I want to know this story. What is this hidden? How did you get here? And so this issue, as well as the next one, because it is to be continued, ties into that. And the writing is great, except for I wish my memory served better to know if everything in here that was happening kind of happened at the end of that last event. Because as we remember most of what happened, I don't necessarily remember Cosmic Cube.
Yeah, the Cosmic Cube is a big player in this book, but I don't remember it either, but I think we should probably pick up our old issues and skim through them and see if the Cosmic Cube was actually in there.
But you have, I mean, like as we've said, both Nova and Star-Lord sacrificed themselves to beat up Thanos. Whereas going into this world, though, they were kind of to get, like, you know, not friends, but not frenemies.
No, they were good. Who's that?
Thanos and...
Thanos and Star-Lord?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they were working together to stop the greater threat.
And it kind of seems a little bit, you know...
Because when Thanos was resurrected, the Guardians of the Galaxy were the first to pick him up, and he fought with Drax right away and killed Drax, although you find out that he really just sent Drax to this cancer universe.
Mm-hmm.
So Drax is involved in it. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Throw another person in there to fight.
But yeah, they were working together to stop the cancer universe. And then it's kind of like Peter Quill backstabbed Thanos by saying, okay, cool, now that I've used you to stop the bigger threat, now I'm going to stop you so that you're not a threat
either. Yeah, and that's the part that I have also a little bit of trouble with. But, I mean, Brian Michael Bendis wrote this, and I think, I mean, even if some of this is not necessarily canon to what happened at the end of it, it still has enough of what went on with it that it makes it seem plausible. The art in here is just phenomenal. First Saint Colors by Justin Ponzer. We got to meet him back in the spring, and just beautiful, beautiful. Pencils by Ed McGuinness, inks by Mark Farmer. The layout is simple to see. There's a couple huge splash pages that really show the depth of the characters. I love that Star-Lord has his old suit. So although most people that have been reading this new series now kind of have a different take on him, they're at least going back to that, okay, he did wear this, you know?
He was wearing those clothes when he was in the cancer universe.
Yeah. Because when they first came out with the new series, it kind of seemed like they were writing over all this stuff happening. So this is very a very good link to the past issues, which is great. And it all seems plausible. I mean, for saying superhero comic books, cancerverse, and all that is plausible, at least for the sense of the way the characters are written. Thanos is saying, give me the Cosmic Cube, I'll get us out of here, which is kind of true.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmic Cube kind of is taking over Peter Quill because he doesn't know how to control it, which is true. And
isn't the Cosmic Cube like an actual sentient being? At some point, it was like,
yeah, they've switched it so many times of what it, I mean, now it's a tesseract and now it's whatever gem, stone,
that's infinity stone. That's the movie verse, though.
Yeah, no, but it could be ultimately anything. I think.
Is it a writer's plot device?
Yes.
It's whatever it needs to be.
Kind of hoping that this was going to be a self-contained issue so that I could be so excited for it. But when you see the to be continued at the end, it's like, damn it. I want to know what happened, because they didn't even explain what happened. They just kind of said they fought.
Yeah, so this is kind of the setup issue for those who are unfamiliar with those past events and what happened there.
That is actually true, yeah, because it kind of explains everything that we explained, but in a new sense of what they want to say canon was
Yeah.
instead of what it is now.
I do think if you did not read those previous stories, then you will probably be a little lost as to what's going on. So just go with it. Just, all right, they're in a Cancerverse. Okay. And Drax was there.
Yeah. Out of nowhere.
And I am Groot. So,
So that's what I got. Matt, what do you have?
I'm going to review Uncanny Avengers number 23. And the reason I chose this one is because I've got several things to say about the overall story of Uncanny Avengers.
I
First
like
off,
how we've kind of grown from let's talk about the single issue somehow to what's been
yeah,
happening
let's
in
be.
the past. I mean, the stories have just been so good that you kind of need those connections to
Yeah.
make it. No.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's a good point. With Remender, it's really kind of hard to, Rick Remender wrote this, by the way. It's kind of hard to just look at one issue and be like, oh, that stands alone all by itself and doesn't have connections with everything else. He's been doing that since day one. The web that he is weaving, is a really interesting story. They got a new artist on the series right now, Sanford Green, colorist Dean White. And I like the shift in art. I wasn't too happy with what it was looking like before. But I mean, it did its job for telling the story. I think particularly the colors in this now are much more vibrant, and facial expressions I think are pretty keen. So, anyways, in the last story, they stopped Kang from his devious plot, which was, I mean, I could spend an hour telling you all the things that have happened with this, of, well, this was the bad guy, but that really wasn't the bad guy because Kang was the bad guy, and time travel. Time travel solves all of it. But what this one is a new start. It's kind of like resetting and setting up the next story arc, which is going to have the Red Skull and this whole idea of the Red Onslaught, which I know we'll be talking about a little bit later for news. And once again, Rogue has lost her ability to control her powers, and she's got somebody stuck in her head, and so she's totally
Isn't it
freaking out.
Simon
Yeah,
or?
Wonder Man, Simon Wilson. And she's just totally freaking out, saying, not again, not again. Because, and I think, they dedicate several pages of this book to her flipping out and freaking out. I'm kind of like, okay, I get the point, let's move on. But then again, I think it's a crucial moment for a character like Rogue, who thought she was over the worst of her, torturous powers, and now they're returned, and she's quite upset about it. So, let's see. Did you know that Havoc and Wasp are married?
No. Well,
Yeah. See,
isn't this
they got
continuing
married.
from, yeah, the
They got
other.
married in an alternate future that only they remember.
And that's
So
what.
technically, it's not legally binding. But they had a daughter together, and that was like a whole thing. And the
This is the
issue.
shit that you need to kind of know in order to know what's
Yeah.
going on in this
This
issue.
is like Remender really wants to write these characters with deep connections to each other. And I think the superhero genre oftentimes lacks those true connections, such as like the parent-child relationship. Havoc and Janet are both devastated because they lost their little girl. And in their lives, they raised her for like 6 years on a dystopian mutant future. And now they're back together and they don't have their daughter. And so they're really like heartbroken for that. And so you get a lot of, pain and frustration. And I think Remender does a great job of writing that. The problem is, though, is you only had one issue that you really established that all this crap happened. So you just kind of have to take it as, all right, sure, they're married now. They've been, together for several years. Their marriage has lasted longer than most comic book celebrity marriages. And they had a kid. So,
Just going back though to the alternate world, that's why this book makes me wonder how is like because it's the biggest thing for me. I mentioned it a lot in my review. Canon. I
yeah.
want this stuff to be what's going
I'd
on.
like
Like
to
if
know where
it's
pieces fit.
if it's a what if or something, good. I know it's a what if and it's kind of like exploring the possibilities, but when you have this long of a book and there's a lot of shit going on, How does this work?
Like, they destroyed, early on, they destroyed Peak, which mm-hmm. is the Sword's, like, floating space station that protects galaxy. And yet, when they had the Thanos, the Infinity crossover event, the Peak was a huge, like, part of that. Like, people were infiltrating the Peak. So, I don't know if the Peak was supposed to be there or not be there or when it got refixed, because Remender kind of does his own thing.
Yeah, he is taking... The good thing with most of these characters are, really, if you think about it, though, aren't really in some of the other books. I mean, Captain is, but...
Captain America is, Thor is, Wolverine is, but a lot of the other ones, you're right.
I mean, they are pretty much a cross of X-Men and Avengers, which is what they... Marvel's been doing a lot of things.
Uncanny and Avengers, put the two words together and...
And they fit.
Yeah. So, again, this for me, this has been a troubling book because there's been times that I'm like, you know what, I don't know if I'm going to keep reading it. And yet I keep reading it because it is really a good story. The characters are really starting to grow on me. At first I was like, yeah, whatever, Janet and, you know, and Havoc got married. Or they're looks like they're flirting together. I don't care. And now I'm like, oh, I really do care for them. I really do want to see them stay together. Fun little fact, Immortus, the future version of Kang, came back and said, you can have your daughter back. I just have to tell you the exact time and time and date that you need to conceive. And somehow the same egg that Janet dropped in the future will be the same one that he can impregnate, and they will have the exact same daughter again. And I was kind of like, oh, I wish I had that time travel. The last thing I'll say in this is Captain America's already old in it.
Okay.
And
when did that happen?
I don't know. They said several weeks have passed since the end of the last issue and this one.
So several weeks, he's just grown old.
He's just grown old. I know that this ties into why Sam Wilson. Yeah, that's not Wonder Man's name. He's
That's Simon.
Simon something. Wilson.
Right? Simon something, whatever.
Simon Cowell?
No.
Yeah, but Sam Wilson, the Falcon, is now Captain America, or is going to be. I'm not sure if that book has come out, and, you know, should probably do some fact-checking there. But I knew that part of that was, like, Captain America was going to be too old to carry on, mostly because I saw people making jokes about how old Captain America and how old Nick Fury are together. So, yeah, Captain America's already old in this one. So, again, where does this fit in the canon? I don't know, but it really doesn't matter. Because I'll keep getting it because Rick Remender knows how to tell good stories.
All right. Well, before we get into news and notes, got a bar back here for our buddies over at High Five Co-op Brewery. Now, they don't necessarily have their brewery yet. They're trying to raise funds for it.
They've got memberships. They've got some starting capital. But they still need more before they can get an actual place.
So. Now, what is the High Five Co-op Brewery?
The High Five Co-op Brewery is like most co-ops. It's owned by the people, right? You buy in, you pay your admission. It's a lifetime fee, and you are technically part owner of this brewery. Their goal and their idea is that it's going to be brewed by the members, and with, you know, kind of help from a board. That will make the decisions as to which beers are we going to make and which beers won't we make. So essentially, if you're a member and you have a really good home brew recipe, you can submit it. They'll take a look at it. They'll taste it. They'll look at the viability of can we make this in large batches. And quite possibly, you could have had the recipe or probably even help brew that beer for the co-op members to drink.
Yes. And in the United States, there's only one other actual working co-op, which is... done wonders since they've been able to find a brewery, and that's down in Texas somewhere. I forget exactly where. So this one is in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they are currently trying to raise some funds to get an actual location. Things have been on the up and up of getting the word out, getting memberships, and everything that you said.
Even with as saturated as our community is with microbrews, there's still a lot of positive support for something like this. Even people that love to go to like Founders or Parent or these other places. They're like, and I would also love to come drink at this place. So,
yep, they have a $15,000 goal and 54 days as of this recording, probably 52, 50, well, kind of dating when we're actually 50, recording.
50 yeah. days.
When listeners listen to this, but go check it out. They got a couple good rewards. One of which is kind of cool. I mean, for $50, you get a year Mug Club membership, which it seems like might be one of their pricing plans to get full-time members. It will be credited towards the overall becoming a lifetime member, which when you're a lifetime member, then you got your mug all year, which is also another cool thing. Yeah. Just need to use it. A couple other things, you can get obviously a t-shirt, a hoodie, along with some of the other pledges before. The big one here, if you are a big brewer and you have the money or the ability, $6,000 or more, and buy them a fermentation tank. Because obviously, not only do they need a location, which I believe, from what we've heard, they have a couple of them set aside.
Scouted out, yeah.
Now they just need the equipment to start brewing and the people to come in to start drinking.
Yeah, well, I don't think it would be any problem to find people to come in and drink. But yeah, to have the startup equipment to make it in large batches. Again, a lot of the people have a ton of experience doing small batches. But they obviously, to on a more commercial scale, they're going to need more commercial equipment.
So. All right. Well, going into news and notes, something that we had mentioned last week was the first appearance of Superman was on eBay. And I forget what we said at the time that it was looking like it was going towards.
It was over a million. But it ended at $3.2 million.
That is a lot.
It is, especially for a comic book about Superman.
I have this two things. One, it's believed to be the highest ever paid for a comic book, far surpassing back in 2010, 2011 of the $2.1 million mark for the same Action Comics. But the cover is one of the things, though, that obviously at the time, and if it wasn't so rare, it's just a cover of him lifting a car.
Yeah.
But I have loved so many times whenever anyone does a variant upon it. Because, I mean, it is so iconic that when sometimes variants can be good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't necessarily like them all the time, but.
Yeah, obviously there's the. The rarity factor is why this is, gone for such a price.
I mean, but 10 cents for this to be millions. Like, screw going back in time and, like, picking lottery tickets. I would just go back and buy, like, 20 of these and just sit on them.
A stack of all number ones, yeah. And if you went back in time there, you could also kill Hitler before he was, the bad guy that he was. And so you could, win both ways. Still kill Hitler and get your Action Comics number one.
Well, speaking of variants, with Marvel's 75th anniversary, Deadpool is going to be doing multiple variants. And
again? Really? Deadpool in a variant? I don't think I've seen this before except for last month.
I know. He is the biggest comic book cover whore.
He is.
I can't even say next to anyone. Like, he is. He does a lot. And I think it's just because a lot of people like just drawing him goofy over what is normally comic book covers are serious.
Yeah. No, I will agree. He does offer the largest amount of fun to be had. And I will admit, many of the variant covers I do like. But it doesn't mean I'm going to go pick him up.
No, I mean, if they're the same price as a normal, but I don't go out of my way to pay extra for a one in whatever, because unlike Derek, we don't invest that much in.
That's true, but Derek might get to like 90 years old if his liver holds out and be able to sell some of his like variant cover number one. It'll be much rarer because there's only like 1,000 or something like that, 1 in 1,000, but.
I hope these are so rare that he has to buy at least one. And
just to make him buy a Deadpool variant. That'd be great. Is he going to be on the cover of Daredevil?
Hopefully. I'm assuming he's going to be on all of them. So, we'd kind of mentioned before, there's two teasers now for the Axis and Allies event coming up. First one that came out the other day, which is the Red Skull in the Onslaught armor.
The Red Onslaught, as Rick Remender has named it.
Yes, and pretty much with the caption, you'll welcome this cleansing, Alex. And two things. One, that armor is pretty sweet. Back in the day when Onslaught was there, it was a really cool... Well, that was the start of the Heroes...
Reborn.
Kick. Well, Gone. Yeah. I forget what it was. And then a year later, Heroes Reborn, which was a very cool time for comic books. Right. But, man, I don't... I'm liking what they're doing with the Red Skull. At the same point, it's like, man, you're the Red Skull. And now you're going to be, yeah, very overpowered.
But you know what? I will admit that when I first saw that, like, they teased at that at the end of an Uncanny Avengers. They're, like, running from something. And you're like, what are they running from? And all of a sudden, at the very end, you see, like, Onslaught with Red Skull's face. And I really, like, kind of had chills going, like, oh, that would be an awful future. So...
I'm really hoping, though, with how everything's going, that they do keep Professor X dead. I mean, for a character that does not need to be resurrected because there's really no need for the, you know, we need to all get along type scenarios anymore. His brain's freaking in this dude. Like, obviously, it's going to have to get taken out, but that...
Yeah,
they're going to put in a clone Professor X or something. I can just see that happening at the end of this. He'll come back and be like the Messiah. And
time travel.
Yep. The other one is of...
maybe he'll still be stuck in a wheelchair.
That's how he'll get
Patrick,
back.
Patrick Stewart comes and saves the day.
And they go, hey, we got this brain to put in your head because you look like Professor X. The other one is a teaser trailer that has Tony Stark on the front with like a glass of wine and says, this is your fault, Stark. And... that's it. People on the internet are asking, you know, what did Tony do? Well, I think he's we've kind of talked a lot about what's been going on with these incursions, which a lot of this whole event is going to be over about. So we kind of know he built bombs to destroy worlds. We kind of know that, I don't know, he's kind of a dick.
And we kind of know that he's going to become superior, and superior is a way of saying asshole.
Yes. That is the moniker for that. So... that's probably what his fault is. I doubt that and that's what every time they show him with some sort of alcohol, everyone's like, oh, he's going down that road again. He's going to drink.
I bet he does in Superior.
Really?
I bet he does start drinking again in the Superior storyline that they're coming up with him. Because whatever brain chemistry shift he'll have had will be strong enough to have ridden that part of his personality.
I guess so, and I guess I could be okay with it. That's one of the things that I always hated with when artists or writers would kind of write that in there just to show how strong he is. I mean, the Demon in the Bottle was such a great thing to show about alcoholism that I feel that it... then now they're just playing with it.
No, but that's the point of it, is that because he's an alcoholic... it only takes like one sip to kind of go back down that path. It'd be very easy for him to slip back into it. And so I think, you know, kind of reminding us about that is not a bad idea, you know?
All right.
And I will say, though, he did drink at the end of Fear Itself, but I tried to drink away the memories of Fear Itself, so I'll just kind of forget that happened.
Hammer for you.
You get a hammer. All right, another one that excites me, the Ultimate Spider-Man series is coming out with Season 3, and it's got the mini title of Web Warriors. So look out for Ultimate Spider-Man Web Warriors on Disney XD. I think I've mentioned it before on the show, but it's one of the cartoon versions of Spider-Man, as there are many. It doesn't really follow any canon, so you kind of have to take it for what it is. But some of the choices that they've made, really great storytelling, really fun animation, and particularly, you know, probably appeals more to younger generations. But I think even adults and teens can appreciate like the cartooniness as you get the like split screen where Spider-Man makes a joke inside his own head that you don't actually see, but you get that sense of humor of this is kind of what a teenager looks like when he's fighting villains. So really great show. I've really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to it. Looks like there's going to be a whole bunch of different Spider-Man variations, including Agent Venom, Flash Thompson Venom.
Okay.
Looks like he might even be in there. So,
I saw online.
It's gonna be a lot like the look that the poster that I'm looking for. It looks a lot like the Spider-Verse.
I'll try to post it to Facebook. I saw like it was a screenshot of like the comic book, and it was going on with some person saying, "Why do they call you Flash?" Because I think his real name is Eugene or something. Why do they call you Flash? And then it goes to back in like high school, sitting in the back of a car, and the girl going, "No, don't worry, it's okay. It happens all the time." And I'm like, "That's freaking hilarious." I'll have to look and see if I can find that.
You know, that's. Yeah, I think Flash Thompson's maturity was a great, you know, idea in storytelling. So,
British science fiction author Karen Travis is bringing out a new gritty G.I. Joe. Within this new series that they're making, you're going to have G.I. Joe, like the world's ever changing, and when you think of them always fighting Cobra, that just seems kind of like you're stuck in your ways. Well, now G.I. Joe faces Cobra that is now trying to be a peacekeeping task force. Now, obviously, there's going to be some...
Their idea of peace is control, but...
Well, there's going to probably... I mean, I can't say for sure because this isn't even out yet. But the moniker, The Fall of G.I. Joe, is going to be kind of what this is about. Where is G.I. Joe going to keep fighting the same battles where... I think it now is going to turn more into political subterfuge.
Yeah, works.
That's the word. Subterfuge. And that's where I see Cobra doing it. Because obviously you're going to see in the pages that
Cobra is not... So it'll be a little bit more Black Ops called drudgery?
That's what I'm seeing. I mean, that's kind of what it is nowadays in real life war, that and just drone strikes. So really not the red and blue lasers going after each other. And
that can never hit.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, I can never tell if G.I. Joe, they never hit because... everyone had a terrible shot, or because they were so good at dodging.
Plus five to dodge roll.
Yes.
Something that is kind of cool, it debuted last month, Hawkeye number 19, which was a story about him having, about when he had some hearing loss. And Matt Fraction and David Aja pretty much told the story through the use of sign language. Now, I personally haven't been reading Hawkeye, so I didn't get this issue, but hearing about this story, that it was inspired by this Utah teen who pretty much helped Fraction learn sign language. He kind of wanted to do something with it within the book, but there's a page dedicated in the back to Leah about... the impact that she had within the language. And this is definitely one of the issues that could be, you know, there for an Eisner Award come next year, because just the storytelling in the way that they put the sign language in, great.
I'll say that actually, as a teacher, that's one of the things that I would look for is, like, good source material for, you know, classrooms and stuff like that. So really awesome idea, and I might actually go pick that up.
Yeah.
So how many of you would like to see Wesley Snipes play Blade again?
Me, maybe. It was, I mean, that and Demolition Man, I mean, he's had some other great movies too, but
I like, you know,
I think that was like really the last good role he played, and he played it decently.
As far as the character Blade is concerned, sure.
I mean, those movies didn't suck. No, I mean, they weren't.
The third one kind of let me down. I mean, but they were vampire movies.
They weren't as bad as Fantastic Four.
No, no. Heavens no.
Like our shitty friend Nick that destroyed that. If Nick was here, he wouldn't be getting mocked like that. But
no, the Blade, or Wesley Snipes, because I know him as Blade. He, I heard he was a real asshole on the set. Like, he was always serious and always a blade in character, doing the whole method acting thing. And apparently that was really obnoxious.
Yeah, so, but he's the one that's kind of starting these rumors about. I mean, yeah. Marvel has reacquired the rights since, I think it's 2011. They got those rights back. So now it's Marvel in-house, which means Marvel has been doing... you know, some other thing. I mean,
the Guardians of the Galaxy. But whether or not they're going to do another major picture for Blade, I don't see why. I mean, I don't know why you'd want to, but
star power, but
yeah, maybe star power, but yeah, it's kind of like we've kind of seen Wesley Snipes do the thing. So if they're gonna do a major picture, what they should probably do is find a new actor to play Blade, kind of give it a little reboot.
True.
But a Netflix series might be fine. I think that character kind of goes with
Daredevil and Luke Cage in them.
Yeah, it's kind of a horror movie, street level threat type deal. If you're not going to need a full, like, millions of dollars for the special effects, then you might as well throw it on Netflix. Develop the story longer. But I think that's probably why I wouldn't be too happy with Wesley Snipes, because his Blade was very stoic and kind of one-dimensional. Very much like Judge Dredd is. And that's okay for, like, a movie, but not so good for a, like,
well,
a,
no,
a
I'd TV say series. Even, well, for Judge Dredd is kind of one-dimensional, so for yeah, that,
because,
that is...
But all the characters revolve around Dredd. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about Dredd, it's about Dredd being there and the other people around him. Blade is supposed to be kind of about Blade and not the
well,
other
he carries
people
a sword, him. That's his blade.
His blade. So, we'll see. I don't know, but this also could just be Wesley Snipes looking for attention.
Some interesting things about... Agent Carter, the okay. new TV series. The news to me. It's probably not news to anyone else, but I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it, Matt. Like, it's going to be obviously set a couple years after Captain America, so it's going to be a period piece, which do you think that can fly on television?
It could. I think it's risky, but I think Marvel has taken several risks that they thought that you couldn't make a period action piece when they made the first Captain America, and they did. They said you couldn't make a space comedy, which they did with Guardians of the Galaxy. So I think it could be good. It's going to be the compelling issues are going to be A, do you have good storylines, and B, can you get those storylines to hook in with your greater universe?
But, I mean, they're going to be kind of about spy missions of Carter's character. So how many of the other characters can you kind of put in there? I mean,
maybe it takes you create some new ones like they did in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And you
but you're going to still want some of the main... Otherwise, how is this that's just true. Not something else that's of true. There? But one of the cool things that has been said is that there's... over at Marvel, they have like a timeline. Like they have a room with... people in charge that have like
for
an overall
for the movie verse.
Well, not even that, yeah. Just like everything that's going on. And when okay. they put something new here, they realize then they have to put it in the future here. So when the main character or actress was talking about, you know, trying to figure out how the show's going to go and everything, and they're like, nope, can't do that because we already got this set up here for this being created here. That was just kind of like a cool intel of Marvel.
Yeah, I bet I wouldn't be surprised if some of those things tie into the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, another little news nugget for you is San Diego Comic-Con is not 100% sure that they will stay in San Diego. There were supposed to be improvements made to the convention center to expand it as San Diego Comic-Con continues to expand, and those haven't been made yet. The contract with San Diego Comic-Con and the San Diego Convention Center, runs through 2016. But then they're open for negotiations, so is it possible that we'll get San Diego Comic-Con outside of San Diego?
Maybe. Would it be called then San Diego?
Well, when I first saw this story, it made me think maybe that's why they're so insistent on the title and trademark of Comic-Con being theirs, like when they're suing Salt Lake Comic-Con. And... and that might explain it. Maybe there were things going on at the company that, you know, we only got that story first and now we get this one. So that would make a little bit more sense. But still, no, don't, you know, I'm not going to just call it Comic-Con because Comic-Con is a description of the event, not a title.
Yeah, there are many Comic-Cons.
Yeah, it's the San Diego one would be...
San Diego Comic-Con.
San Diego Comic-Con. If they want to change location, I'm fine with that. I will still give it its place of honor as one of the biggest, you know, cons. However, then don't worry about calling it Comic-Con.
Two quick things. We'd mentioned before there's been many people talked about for being Doctor Strange, but Joaquin Phoenix has been reportedly in the final discussions of Doctor Strange. And there's that, I guess. But
yeah.
My favorite thing is Grooting has entered the lexicon. Now, Grooting is, as Urban Dictionary says, the act of spreading one's legs and bending at the knees while slowly waving the arms to resemble Baby Groot, as seen at the end of The Avengers, which...
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, sorry. That one.
That one.
Which is cute. I mean, it was cute when you see, you know, and that's kind of like going to be the new dancing to Jackson 5 or any Gundam sort style. Of... Yeah. So, that's cool. Now people are using more words for my favorite comic book, and hopefully I am Groot.
I thought Grooting would be saying I am and then placing something in his place. So, I'm just glad that more people now get my sense of humor. or at least Groot's, because he's a really funny guy. All right.
Well, that wraps up news. Let's quick get into Indie Turnpike.
Any sponsors for news?
No.
Okay.
Indie Turnpike brought to you by Daw Apparel, though.
All right. Apparel. Go check them out. Get some apparel from Daw Apparel.
Yeah. Get our apparel. Get a Drunk on Comics t-shirt.
It's unparalleled apparel.
This week, Indie Turnpike is Dream Police issue number 4. Now, in a world that, you know, there are nightmares, there are dreams, there are demons and everything in between, you have the Dream Police who obviously try to chase them down. And part of this, I mean, reminds me a bit of, not Morpheus,
Sandman,
okay. but not really. Okay. Just in the sense of, you know, there are...
Somebody policing the dreaming.
But then it also kind of reminds me a little bit of RIPD, of where there are these others that can police things that aren't in the everyday known universe. Because most of this sets place within the world between dreams, which is kind of why I get the sense of both of those, but not really.
I just want to know if the Dream Police disproportionately pull over minorities. Sorry, that was bad.
No, the art by, oh man, Sid Kotian, is very straightforward in most things, but there are some real looking pages that you kind of get of where you're at in the dream. But kind of when you're within the book, you're more or less thinking that you are in the real world, even though half of it is the dream, and you don't know necessarily what is what. So almost, let's throw in, what's that Leonardo DiCaprio movie?
Inception?
Yeah. So okay. Let's throw that in within this story arc as well, and you kind of get of what's going on. Okay. You have the main character, Joe Thursday, who has his partner, who he doesn't necessarily believe is his partner. He believes he has another partner because he keeps having dreams of this other partner. And that's kind of the story so far. By J. Michael Straczynski. Yeah, like I said, it's kind of cool trying to figure out what is real and what's not.
So this is kind of a thinking comic that messes with your perceptions of reality?
Well, yeah, because you as the reader don't necessarily even know if it's true or not, of if he's hallucinating or if he's just dreaming it. But in this issue, he has his partner come to the dream world or visit him and holding someone captive, but it was kind of cool how he got out of there. Was he realized that he was going to wake up. He got bit within the dream, and when he got bit within the dream, he's like, the pain, it's waking me up, you know, I don't have much time, but I'm your partner, this and that. And Joe's kind of like, what the hell was that all about? And then the person kind of just vanishes. So that's where I was like, okay, so all this has been kind of happening within the dream world. Overall, it's an interesting take on things. It makes you think, and it makes you wonder, well, what is the up, what is the down, what is all around? So definitely check it out, Dream Police number 4.
All right.
Matt, do you have booze in a book?
I do got some booze and some books. This is a bit of a throwback, and maybe you can get the connection, but what? Alcoholic drink would go best with Ultimate Fantastic Four number 22.
something with four in it.
Four roses? That's a good, that's a very good
for
movie.
Don't ask me what I would do for booze in a book, because the last couple of weeks it's been six shots of rum in this, and we call it this, or six. So you probably have something better than what I could think of.
Ultimate Fantastic Four number 22 was the first appearance of the Marvel Zombies. So I think quite fitting, we'll pair this with a zombie cocktail. Zombie cocktails are traditionally made with one part white rum, one part golden rum, one part dark rum. A lot of rum. One part apricot brandy, one part pineapple juice, half part 151 proof rum.
Some more rum.
Throw it in there. And one part lime juice. So you got the fruity, citrusy, fruity cocktail with lots and lots of rum. Comes from the Caribbean, where zombies and voodoo, you know, kind of originated. And also, with that much rum, you'll probably turn into a zombie. So go ahead, find an old copy or even the graphic novel of the crossover storyline of Fantastic Four number 22 and enjoy yourself a zombie.
All right, and enjoy yourself a retro NES flask by Ink Whiskey, because Booze in a Book is sponsored by
Ink
Whiskey.
You can totally throw your zombie inside a whiskey, Ink Whiskey flask. So.
Well, that about does it for me, Matt. You got anything else that you can think of that you want to...
I've been gone for a while, obviously, with stuff. So most of my books were like last week, but I got one more last call. Original Sin tie-in for Avengers number 34, the time-traveling Captain America. Maybe that's how I got old. It was with the time gem too much.
See, that's what I was kind of wondering, but then that's taking part of what's going on. And
I don't know.
Yeah, for me, really, time has been an issue, but I got to read Black Science, which is always great, following our family members, as we always say. And then Fantastic Four, the Original Sins, still, like I said, I was kind of getting a little in on these Original Sin tie-ins, but they've been good, so... Well, that about wraps it for me.
Keep reading your comics.
And we'll be back next week to talk to you then. Cool. No, them, then, whatever.